It's the Dry Heat Check with Jayco and Espo, episode number 8. That's the Jalen Rose episode, throwing you a curveball. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohn. We do this each and every week in a myriad, if I'm saying that right, of locations.
So
you can check out this podcast, including Sports 360 AZ. Episode Jalen Rose, Espo, for number 8.
I love it. Most people probably don't remember Jalen Rose actually played for the Phoenix Suns.
Of course I do.
It is fantastic because he played about 3.5 minutes, I think, as part of the team. He still complains about it to this day. I think he pretty much hates Mike D'Antoni's guts because he never got a play. And that was the year that Boris Diaw, Amari Stoudemire get suspended in the playoffs in that series against.
And was he on that playoff team?
He was. And the problem with that team was Mike D'Antoni had such a short rotation that when those two guys went out, I believe they only played 6 guys in the game that those two were suspended. And I think Jalen Rose saw a few minutes, but he was so out of playing shape because he hadn't played at all that it hurt them. If they had expanded that rotation that year, maybe Jalen gets a few more minutes. We might be talking about a different way that the 7 seconds or less Suns played out.
So Jalen Rose gets the nod here for episode 8. Other notables who wore number 8, there's a lot of them on the Suns. Eddie Johnson, great guy. Mario Bennett, Vinny Del Negro, whose best years were ruining the Suns' lives. He was the longtime Spur. Channing
you
Frye.
You don't think he was better as a broadcaster for the Suns?
He did okay. Better as a coach, maybe?
No.
No.
He was better in his days with the Spurs. Let's leave it there.
Channing Frye, one of my all-time favorite humans on this earth. I'm going to talk more about him later on the show. Pat Garrity gets the nod, number 8.
I loved Pat back in the day. Got him from the Orlando Magic, I believe.
Yep. We've got Tim Kempton still doing broadcasts with the Suns. DJ Strawberry, who, man, if I was on Twitter when DJ Strawberry was drafted, we'd be using another one of my wet cold takes because I thought this guy was going to be a stud in the NBA. I loved him in college. And finally, Oliver Miller wore the number 8. And you reminded me before the show that was the second time around that he was with the Suns that Oliver Miller wore the number 8.
Wore 25 when he was a rookie in that second year with the Suns as well. Fun fact.
Yes.
I actually have an Oliver Miller authentic purple jersey that he wore during the 92-93 season, number 25. In my home office with an authentic pair of shorts.
So if we played, you know, Storage Wars, you know, I think yours would go for a pretty penny, with all this memorabilia you have?
If somebody broke into my house and stole all my memorabilia, they found the right Arizona sports fan, they'd probably be fairly happy with
that. Write that down for people that are listening.
You can
direct message me after the show on Twitter, and I can give you Espo's address.
I have quite the expansive security system, including a very angry chihuahua at home. So you don't want to do that.
Look out for the chihuahua. Only one Arizona Cardinal wore the number 8. That's Larry Wilson.
Dude played with 2 broken hands in a game. My dad told me about this when I was a kid, about how he remembered Larry Wilson playing with casts on both his hands. He wasn't like a lineman.
He was a running back or a receiver.
He was a defensive back.
Oh, okay.
He was playing cornerback with 2 broken hands. One of the greatest defensive backs from that era for the Cardinals.
Diamondbacks, Mike DeFelice. Now, this is a guy we thought about naming this episode after.
And then we realized, you don't want to name it after a guy that lit somebody's backside on fire, a female.
And was cut as a result. He also, I will never forget, I was at the game where he had that big brawl at home plate that he started. So DeFelice, Matt Cada, someone that was a promising guy for a first couple years and then kind of fizzled out. Gerardo Parra, I think a long-time Diamondback favorite. And happy birthday, Tuffy Gosiewicz, number 8. Has been number 9, like you pointed out. Switched to number 8 this season when Matt Williams rejoined the organization.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about any of these Diamondbacks.
So we'll move forward.
That's basically everything you need to know about that group of guys.
And then Coyotes, Daniel Briere was one of the original Coyotes, spent a lot of time with the team. Jeff Sanderson, Scotty Upshaw. I was a Scotty Upshaw fan. Gilbert Brule, Matthew Lombardi, and currently with the Coyotes, Tobias Reeder.
Outside of Daniel Briere, I don't recognize any of these names.
Scotty Upshaw and Matthew Lombardi?
Nope, I recognize... I recognize Daniel Briere, and only because I remember tiny dude, had a lot of potential. That Coyotes let him go, and he wound up having huge
numbers
in both, I believe it was Buffalo and Philadelphia, he had success. So I remember that. That was back in the days where my family had Coyotes season tickets at the old AWA, Section 208.
208, holla! So those are the number eights, speaking of 208 and the number eight. We've come full circle with the eights, but Jalen Rose gets the nod. On the show, we're going to talk Cards Camp. Bruce Arians hospitalized. Really scary news there. We'll get into all things Cardinals Camp. We'll bring back the airing of grievances. That'll include something Diamondbacks related and also something Olympics related. And then you posed the question, you know, the Fave 7 movies was a big hashtag going around in the last week, Espo. So you, as you do best, you localized it. You did the hashtag Fave7AZAthletes. We'll give ours, plus read some of the responses that we got on Twitter this week. That's what we have coming up on the show. But let's start off with the first, the sad news, frustrating news, maybe not sad because it sounds like he's going to be okay, but still unfortunate news of Bruce Arians being hospitalized, having to leave practice in San Diego, and he didn't even make it out to practice. No. And you see that, you can't help but think, you know, he's in his 60s, which isn't like it's 90 or 80, you know, but he's still on the other half of 50. And, you know, you can't help but think the worst a little bit, that there could be something really wrong and it could impact him being able to coach. We saw what happened with the guy that ended up helping him become a head coach.
Chuck Pagano.
Chuck Pagano. I was totally blanking on his name there for a second. Yeah. Pagano ends up with leukemia out of nowhere in the middle of the season, and BA has to take over. You know, you can't help but think the worst in situations like these. It sounds great, though, that he's going to be released and he's really okay at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's concerning when on a Tuesday evening when they're about to have a public practice in San Diego that you get word that, well, Bruce Arians isn't here and we don't quite know why. Then you find out he's been taken to the hospital. Yeah, of course your mind goes to places where you're concerned about it, because Bruce Arians has had health issues in the past. I believe he had cancer.
Yeah, I think I read that he had a bout with cancer. Yeah. I don't know much about that.
But. So you get concerned, but everything we've heard, he should be back in the fold either Wednesday or Thursday, and should be back. It was precautionary that they took him to the hospital, and things sound like it's going to be okay. So that's what you want to hear from that. But it does, you know, first off, you're concerned about the man himself, his family, all that. And then, you know, as time passes a little bit, you wonder, well, man, if something did happen to him, what would happen with this Cardinals season? Mm-hmm. How would that play out? And luckily, we don't have to worry about that.
Yes. And to be honest, I mean, I would sound ignorant to say I didn't think about the team, but mm-hmm. to be honest, the root of this is anyone who's been around Arians in town, covering the team, being a fan of the team, going to games, has just basically fallen in love with the guy. Yep. I tweeted out a couple weeks ago, I was out to dinner for my anniversary, and I saw two different guys that had the Bruce Arians look. They were wearing forward Kangol hats. They were wearing black rimmed glasses. They had short sleeve button down shirts. Like, they literally had the Bruce Arians look going. They were both middle-aged guys, both at the same restaurant. He has really captured the hearts of everyone in town. So I just couldn't help but really feel for him and his family above the team. But I would be ignorant to say that I didn't think about the ramifications it could have the team if he couldn't be on the sidelines.
Well, and the Kangol hat point is a valid one, because when we were growing up, you'd get your butt kicked if you wore one of those hats yeah. forward. You had to wear it backwards.
You had to go
the Samuel L. Jackson
Samuel Jackson, yep.
Look. And
I had a Nike one that had a sweet swoosh on the front of it.
I did, too. It was dark blue, white Nike swoosh on the front. God, we made some bad choices in terms of apparel back in the day.
Yeah, I was wearing JNCO jeans too. You remember those? Yeah. Where you couldn't even see my shoes because the pants were so baggy over them.
But now Bruce Arians is affecting what people wear in town, and I never would have imagined that a Cardinals coach would have an impact on what somebody would wear.
A pure fashionista. It's amazing. Bruce Arians. Cards camp, though. So we have a preseason game to talk about. We also have camp and what to look forward to. There was some overreactions, I think. Some positive, maybe some negative. More negative because the team lost 31-10. But I'll start with you on what you think has been a big overreaction from the first preseason game.
It's got to be Drew Stanton. Everybody seemed to freak out about Drew Stanton's performance. And yeah, was it rough? Did he have an interception? Sure. First preseason game. Guys are going to have bad games in the first preseason game, the first few weeks. I do not question Drew Stanton at all. He is the perfect backup quarterback for this team. He understands the system. He's proven that if need be, he can win games and spot starts. I have no concern about Drew Stanton. Now, if you want to worry about Matt Barkley and Coker, yeah, go ahead. Those guys probably are not going to be on this roster. It was atrocious what they did in game one, and they're guys that aren't proven. But Drew Stanton is a proven guy. Do not freak out about what Drew Stanton can do under center.
He did look very bad. I won't sugarcoat it. You also have to think about he was out there minus DJ Humphreys with the entire second string offensive line that included, I think, Toner and Bame, who are both rookies playing in their first NFL action. So I won't be too hard on Stanton. He did have some questionable decisions, but I'm not going crazy saying that we need a different backup quarterback. I will be curious to see, though, if they go into week one of the regular season with just two quarterbacks. That's something that I think will be interesting and something to keep an eye on based on what you said. An overreaction from my standpoint, I mentioned DJ Humphreys. So DJ Humphreys goes against Khalil Mack, who everyone thinks is the second best pass rusher in the NFL minus Von Miller. I think ultimately he's going to be better than Von Miller. I think this guy is going to be a Hall of Famer. He is unbelievable, his skill set and his talent. He made DJ Humphreys look a little bit bad on a couple occasions, but then there were plays where DJ Humphreys looked phenomenal. And I almost enjoy monitoring social media more during games than I do watching the games themselves and reacting to what people are saying. I don't like the 20 people that give play-by-play. I like the people that have reaction and fans that have reaction. I pull up hashtags and I pull up names. Like, I'll type in DJ Humphreys and I'll look through the tweets.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure you do the same. The overreactions with DJ Humphreys for when he was looking bad against Khalil Mack. Are you kidding me? This is Khalil Mack. I just said this is a guy that I think could be a Hall of Famer. He makes everyone look bad.
Yep.
He makes all pro tackles look bad. If Jared Veldheer was in that spot, Jared Veldheer would have looked bad. Are you going to jump ship on Veldheer? It's Khalil Mack, for crying out loud. This was the second overall pick. This was the guy the Cardinals had at the top of their draft board, believe it or not, that we've come to find out the year that he was drafted. On the other side of it, people that are going crazy that he looked good, saying this guy he's the answer. He's the guy. He is going to fit the mold great. Did you see that run that Andre Ellington had? He blocked two guys downfield. Those are great things to have, but I'm not ready to crown him as the savior on the right side of the line. There's still a lot more growth that we need to see out of him. There's still a lot more development that we need to see, but I will tell you one thing. Bobby Massey, I don't think as much losing Bobby Massey, I don't think it's going to be as big of a drop off as people might think in putting DJ Humphreys into that spot. I think he's going to be just fine.
No, I agree. And fan is short for fanatical for a reason. It's a roller coaster of emotion and overreactions, especially in preseason. We'll see DJ Humphreys continue to grow. I don't worry about it. I worry about the depth on the offensive line. We talked that last week. One of these guys goes down and you're probably in a world of hurt. I'm not feeling great about the depth there. So, yeah, a lot of overreactions in a lot of different areas in game one. And I don't quite understand it. Just from the standpoint of, you kind of expect that first preseason game to look bad because your starters are only in there for a series.
And think about it, they're only allowed to wear pads for how many weeks out of the year because of the new CBA? They just put pads on, what, 3-4 days into camp?
Yeah.
And then, what, not even 10 days later, they're playing their first preseason game.
Like, yeah, it's bound to not look great.
No.
It's just, that's the way a first preseason game is going to go. Now, on the other side of things, and not talking, potentially some people overreacting because of a positive, but you look at just the running back, the running back position, and it looked good. Andre Ellington, a guy that I said last week was who I wanted to see most of all in game one, came out and showed he is hungry. He wants to have an impact on this team. Granted, he did it against second string defenders, but he had some big runs. He had the sole touchdown for the Cardinals in that game. I liked what I saw from Andre Ellington. It's kind of the guy we expected when he's not injured. You add that to David Johnson and Chris Johnson, and all of a sudden you've got potentially one of the strongest positions on the team. And you never imagined that you'd say that about the Cardinals and running backs.
Right?
For the entire time they've been in the desert.
The entire time.
That is a position that you always felt was the weakness on the team. Even when they went to the Super Bowl, it was always stopgap guys, old guys, Emmitt Smith coming in.
And not even just
Edgerrin
that.
James run, pass prime.
And run blocking was a problem. Even if they had good name running backs, Edgerrin James, Emmitt Smith, Adrian Morrell, Garrison Hurst.
But a lot of those guys, too, they were expected to be great here. Whether it was young guys like Garrison Hurst, everybody thought he was the answer. You draft him. He failed miserably until he got to San Francisco. Then he showed, or until he got to Cincinnati and then San Francisco, and he showed flashes. The Cardinals have never been solid at running back, and they are this year. This is a group of running backs that I would put up against almost anybody in the league. And you've got the best receiving running back since Marshall Faulk on this team and David Johnson. Oh, and he can run the ball pretty damn well, too.
And he's big, too. Yeah.
This is a position of strength, and that's exciting to me. And I loved what I saw, especially from Andre Ellington in game one.
San Diego's up next. They're out there all week. Preseason game number two is always a little bit better than preseason game number
just
one.
Just a little bit.
Brandon Williams continues to be someone you keep an eye on. We mentioned that was going to be a guy that we wanted to watch last week. And people, there's another overreaction thing. Everything that happened with Brandon Williams in that game was about what I expected. It was he was going to be targeted a lot. He's going to make some mistakes. He's going to give up some big plays. He's going to have some plays where he's in a great spot and does a great job. We saw a lot of that. He was going up against Amari Cooper, who might be one of the best athletes in the NFL next to the Odell Beckham Juniors of the world. He also was going up against Michael Crabtree, who's one of the best route runners in the NFL and was on a Pro Bowler last year. So it's not easy to the first game under the lights to be a superstar.
And he's a guy that's been has barely played the position. He transitioned from it from wide receiver, I believe, and
running back,
in college. So it's not like he came in with a wealth of knowledge at the position, but he is a guy that was a captain as a defensive back in college after he switched to that position, which says a lot about the person and the work ethic. So you know he's going to come back. He's going to have a better game in game two, and he'll continue to improve throughout this process. And I still think he'll be the starter week one over Justin Bethel.
Who else, after as a result of the first week, now is kind of perked your interest for second week of preseason against the Chargers?
I think Andre Ellington definitely is a guy that I want to see him repeat what he did in week one. Drew Stanton, as we mentioned, is a guy I want to see actually succeed in week two. There weren't a lot of guys that did anything that was unexpected for me. I'd like to see what Carson Palmer and the offense can do with a few more series, get some rhythm. I'd imagine they play the entire first quarter this week, if not into the second quarter, depending on their success. So I want to see the offense just prove that they can perform at a level that they did like last year. I as much as I believe in them, I'm still hesitant as a lifelong Cardinals fan
to fully
buy in that this is the most elite offense in the NFL. One thing I'm interested to see is what the Chargers game plan offensively looks like, because Ken Whisenhunt is the offensive coordinator. He's back there. Is there a little bit of an axe to grind? Is he trying to prove something, even though it's a preseason game?
Are they
a little bit more aggressive than you'd imagine in preseason? Because it's got to be tough, especially practicing against the Cardinals, seeing the success they've had, knowing how poorly he did in Tennessee. I think he was 3-20 in 23 games with the Tennessee Titans as a head coach. I wonder if there is something he's going to try to prove. We'll see if they're aggressive on offense where you might not be in a second preseason game.
And speaking of his offense, one extra thing that I'm going to be paying attention to is maybe in the fourth quarter when Mike Bercovici comes in, the former Sun Devil quarterback, who, to be honest, based on how things went for him last year, I wasn't sure if he would end up on an NFL roster. It was a tough year, and he didn't have by any means a great season, but he has an NFL skill set. He's got a big arm. He's not very tall, but he's got pocket awareness, and he's a really bright kid. He's really smart. So it doesn't impact the Cardinals or anything, but I'm anxious to see how he looks in a Chargers uniform for a preseason game.
And it sounds like if he doesn't make the roster, the practice squad is a shoo-in for Burke there. But for me as well, I'm not all that excited for the preseason at all with this Cardinals team because
I want it to get over with.
It doesn't matter.
I really want it over with.
As long as you get out without any major injuries, it's a success. I don't care if you go 1-4. I don't care if you don't look great because this team, with all the hype, with as well as they played last year, all that matters is getting that win week one Sunday night against the New England Patriots and then building upon that. That's all that matters. This preseason means nothing. And it's nice to actually be able to feel like that with a Cardinals season because I don't remember a time where you could feel like that. This year is that year. 0-4 won't even worry me. Nothing will alarm me outside of a major injury in the preseason for this Cardinals team.
The airing of grievances, Espo, something that we introduced last week as a segment within our show. You had two of them last week.
I have two again.
And you have two again?
I have one non-sports and one sports.
Okay, because I have one too. So in interest of time here, let's get rolling.
All right, my first one, I am upset with myself. I got to be frank. I am angry with myself. And I never imagined I'd be airing a grievance
about
to myself on a podcast. Usually I'll just do this in the car while driving to work.
Or look at the mirror or myself. Something. Yeah.
But I'm going to do it here in a public forum.
Glad we can be your psychiatrist today.
I'm laying down on the couch and I'm just going to let it out. So, Jayco, get the notepad
okay,
out.
Okay, I got it.
I am very upset with myself for the fact that I did not get on the Mr. Robot train last year while it was airing on USA Network, and I had to binge watch 13 episodes of that show in a 24-hour period this weekend. Let's just say I'm messed up mentally. If you've watched this show, you understand how it can really screw with your head, and you jam that much into a 24-hour period, 13 hours of that 24 hours spent watching Mr. Robot. I'm hurting, but this show is amazing. One of the best things on television, and the fact that I did not watch this along with everybody else last year in real time, I am mad. I am frustrated with myself.
Enjoy it while you can, that 24-hour, 13-episode binge-watching, because once those little baby feet come, you'll be lucky to get one episode in a day.
You kidding? I'm going to have the phone with my headphones plugged in, rocking that baby in the Baby Bjorn or whatever the case may be.
Spoken like a non-father heading into fatherhood.
It's not going to affect me at all. But on to the sports airing of grievance. This is a serious one that I'm actually pretty frustrated. We record this on Wednesday. Today, Dansby Swanson makes his major league debut as the starting shortstop for the Atlanta Braves. Yeah, remember Dansby Swanson, the number one pick from the Arizona Diamondbacks? The same Dansby Swanson that was traded to Atlanta as part of a major deal that brought back Shelby Miller? Remember how we were kind of led to believe by the Diamondbacks front office that Shelby Miller would eventually be an ace? Unfortunately, it turned out that he was going to be a Reno ace and not an actual ace of a pitching staff. He is in AAA right now when Dansby Swanson is making his major league debut. If you actually had that down as Dansby Swanson would be in the major leagues before Shelby Miller returned to the major leagues, congratulations, come collect your prize because it's coming true. And this brings me to, I'm not a guy that calls for jobs. I'm not a guy that likes to see people get fired because everybody in sports is a human being. And I know fans will call for jobs a lot and get angry. These are guys are people trying to do their best. But the Diamondbacks front office needs changing. We are in the midst of what I'm going to call the worst season in franchise history based on expectations and what happened leading into it.
And stuff off the field, too.
That as well. And you look at it, and now all of a sudden, one of those top prospects you dealt is making a major league debut, is one of the fastest to go from being drafted to playing in the majors ever. And you gave him up for a guy that can't get his head straight and is in AAA Reno trying to be the leader of that staff. You invested $208 million into Zach Greinke. And now you just have an utter and total disaster on your hands. It's time to look at that. And from what I heard, this may actually be the last year on Tony La Russa's contract. He was only signed for 3 years, so this may be the final. So you may have an easy out at the end of the year where you don't have to re-up him, but you got to look at this because this is bad, and this is another black eye on this organization. Then you add in the fact the stadium issues that are going on, the fact that there's now a group called the Integral Group looking to buy Chase Field for $60 million. Put this into perspective. For less than a third of what you paid Zach Greinke, you could actually own your own stadium.
Just keep that
in mind.
I remembered that it cost $230 million to get the approval to fund it.
$238
was the number for them to get approval to build it.
Yep.
So and now they're selling it for $60 million.
$60 million is the low point that the county is willing to accept. Now, I won't bash the Diamondbacks too much because they're looking to get what they deserve in stadium enhancements. But this is another weird situation on top of a bad, bad season. Now, this group that's coming in is Canadian. I'm fine with the Canadian group owning our stadium as long as poutine is offered in the stadium as a food option. I welcome our new overlords from Canada for Chase Field if that happens. But it's time to look at the Diamondbacks as a whole and figure it out, especially on the baseball side, because there's a lot of black eyes. You're running out of eyes to get black eyes with. It's just a shame that Dansby Swanson, great for him, a shame for Diamondbacks fans and the front office that he makes his major league debut and Shelby Miller can't get his stuff straight.
I, like a lot of Diamondbacks fans, fell in love with Dansby Swanson during the College World Series last year when he was at Vanderbilt, and that Vanderbilt team went on an unbelievable run, and this guy was just an absolute superstar. Not only was he a great player, but he was personable and energetic. His teammates loved him. This looked like actually a great piece when they selected him first overall to be the face of the franchise and to be the type of face of the franchise that could be a national face. Paul Goldschmidt is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent, but he doesn't have the personality that really rings true with national coverage. You don't see him anywhere on the MLB All-Star commercials when they've run the last couple of years. But you could have had a guy like Dansby Swanson who maybe won't have the hitting potential that Goldschmidt has reached, but he could have had the personality, the level of play, the all-star status that could have been a great face of the franchise for years to come.
How about a great name too?
And Dansby, a great name.
If he grew one of those handlebar mustaches and twisted it, you'd think old-timey baseball player. Yeah. Dansby Swanson.
And not only that, on top of it, I hated this trade when it happened. I've referred to the group text. Some of these guys listen to to this podcast, so they'll appreciate it.
You need to invite me into this group text.
Maybe we'll bring you in. You talk about the same stuff that we do. I remember when I got the text from one of the guys in it saying that we got Shelby Miller, and I was like, oh, cool. And then we found out that it was for Dansby Swanson, and I was just adamantly against that trade, and I still remain, and that was before Shelby Miller had the season that he's had. So I'm with you that it's just an absolute travesty and what an embarrassment for the team that he is not he's in AAA right now, Shelby Miller is, and not because of it's a rehab assignment. It's because he was sent down, and now Dansby Swanson is with the major league club for the Braves. It's just it's bad.
Well, yeah, the Diamondbacks went all in. They pushed all their chips into the center of the table and then realized the cards that they had were a two, a four, a jack, an ace, and a queen. You got nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. You got a crap hand. And you went all in on it and you mortgaged your future for this season and probably next season. And it's bad. You really need to look at it.
I have an airing of grievance.
Bring it on.
Okay. And this hits this just hit me really hard earlier this week. I pull up an article on USA Today from Sam Amick, I believe it is. And it was just a horrible article, not because of how it was written or anything he did. It was because of what it read and what it said. Gabby Douglas, former all-around gold medalist of the 2012 Olympic Games in London, came back. She didn't end up getting into the all-around. She was third. And so much has been said about not putting her hand over her heart when the team won the gold. Okay, go to any NBA game, NFL game, Major League Baseball game, go to any game and see how many guys have their hands over their hearts. I can speak for a fact right now that more often than not on an NBA floor before a game, there is not a hand over the heart. I don't remember there ever being a rule where a hand needs to be over the heart. I remember that for the Pledge of Allegiance when I was in elementary school. But it's standing at attention is what you're supposed to do. And showing respect is what you're supposed to do when the national anthem is read. And that's not me like disrespecting my country. I love my country. I stand at respect when the national anthem is sung. So the fact that you are crushing a kid, Espo, 20-year-old kid, on Twitter because she didn't put her hand over her heart, because she clapped but didn't stand for her teammates when they were competing in the all-around, because you're making fun of her hair and her smile, which has racial implications, mind you, because you're doing all that stuff, it downright pisses me off, because this is a human freaking being and she reads and she sees all this stuff, which brings you to the point that I just cut myself off about. Sam Amick wrote that 15 minutes after she conducted this interview with him and other members of the media, she was back on her phone, which you knew it was scrolling through just a bunch of shit. Just a bunch of crap that she was having to read, because any human being, when they're in that type of capacity, when they know stuff's being thrown at them, like BS if you just tune it out and you don't pay attention.
Oh,
you're
yeah,
gonna look at it. I've been trashed on Twitter for articles I've written or stances I've taken. I'm not going to ignore it. I read that stuff. They read this stuff. This is a child representing our country in the grandest of grand when it comes to gymnastics. And the fact that you are going to dog on her because of not standing a certain way, because she has her hair a certain way, because she smiles funky or her attitude looks like it's a certain way, is a downright joke. And I have a rule on social media that I will never say something unless I don't feel comfortable saying it to someone's face. I won't. I won't do it. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all. But you can have stances and you can have opinions about things. But I put my opinions out there that I wouldn't mind someone else hearing if I was looking, say, Drew Stanton. If I wanted to go out and say he was horrible in the first preseason game, I'm going to tweet it out if I feel comfortable saying it to his face. And that's not me being soft. That's me just owning up and being a man about it and saying, if I'm going to have a take, I'm going to be prepared to say it in front of someone's face. I have a lot of trouble believing that the things that Gabby Douglas is receiving, or the angst that she's getting, or the brutality she is receiving via social media, is something that any of these people would say to her face, because they'd look at her and they'd see she is a child.
She's a human being.
20 years old, and she is a human being, and someone that is on your team. She's on the United States of America representing her country, not just herself. It is just an outright joke, and it made me so upset reading that article.
Honestly, this upset me as well. And the thing, I'll address the hand over the heart thing first. Does anybody else realize that there was a presidential candidate, the guy that's representing the Republican party in this presidential candidate, that did the same thing during a debate, didn't put his hand over his heart? There was no uproar about that.
But no, because it's not a rule.
It isn't. And I'm sick of unwritten rules dictating sports and other things in this world. If it's important enough to be a rule, write it down. Let us all abide by it. Don't hold people to unwritten rule standards. And I'm sick of keyboard warriors, all right?
Yeah.
I spent 5 years running the Suns' Twitter handle, and I saw, and also Suns Dancers, I helped with that, and the Phoenix Mercury. And I saw some of the most grotesque, disgusting things said that these people, because they're hiding behind a keyboard, say and are so disrespectful. And I took there was no more joy that I took than calling out people like that will do that kind of crap online because they're too cowardice to do it in their own life. They take their own anger and hate and bitterness about whatever's going on in their life, and they channel it towards people that they shouldn't. You would not believe the disgusting stuff that was said to the dancers.
I don't even
and said about
right when
Phoenix
you said
Mercury.
Suns Dancers and Mercury.
Oh, it was disgusting.
I don't want
to
know.
I used to take the team handle and call out these guys, and my favorite was to call out sexism about people when they were talking. One guy went on a rant about how the Suns were playing like girls. You quote tweet that bad boy, and from the Suns account, I said, you know what? That's funny because some of the greatest athletes we know are the at Phoenix Mercury. Blew up. People loved it because people are sick and tired of this, especially when it comes to somebody like Gabby Douglas, she's 20 years old. She's a kid who came, wasn't going to actually compete in the Olympics, got talked into it, came back to try to help this team win.
And she did, by the way.
And she had a tough time because she didn't get to make it back to defend her all-around gold medal. So, of course, she's going to be a little bit disappointed. And then you go off on her for no reason. There's absolutely no point in doing this to another human being. But people do it all the time. And I've been in the same boat for articles I've written or things I've said. Some people have made an entire living off of just hating on people online. And we're skewing into that's what we want from the media, too. We want this just combative attitude about everything, and there's no point to that. And this is a prime case. Back off. We saw it with Leslie Jones during the Ghostbuster stuff. Leslie Jones has become super famous at the Olympics for how much she's cheering for Team USA via social media, but she took all sorts of sexist trash online. It's time to stop this kind of stuff.
And Gabby Douglas ultimately finished 7th, I think it was, in the uneven bars, which you just can't help but feel all this stuff was in the back of her mind. Yeah. So congratulations, Americans who were trashing her on Twitter. You impacted one of our own to a point where it affected her play. And don't give me this, well, she's an athlete at the highest level, she should rise above it. Again, she is a child, she is a human being and deserves nothing more than our support, because she, of all people, should be supported and loved because she brought us a gold medal in the all-around 4 years ago when no one expected her to do it. It was one of the best stories in the world, really, from the Olympics when they were in London.
People are people. We've got to.
Yeah, people
we've
suck is what they do. But I appreciate our listeners. You guys don't suck, in general.
Charles
suck.
Barkley's lucky that we had so many airing of grievances, because I was going to go off on something he said, but we'll leave it alone.
We'll maybe leave that for next week.
Maybe next week.
Check that out. Charles Barkley was on Brad Sesmat's show this week, and it was a great interview.
And basically blamed Jerry Colangelo for the play of the USA team.
Which is interesting. So go check that out.
Definitely.
Let's get a little lighter and happier now, Esper. Right. We got things that were bothering us off our chest.
The vein in your neck is still pulsing. Are we all right to go?
Is it? Wow.
Are we all right to go into something lighthearted?
Deep breath.
Do we need to just stop recording for a second and let you kind of chill out a little
bit? I'm cool.
Usually I'm the guy that yells and gets frustrated.
Well, I got this show. Really made me mad.
Well,
so
I'm glad you got it out.
So the big hashtag this week that was trending on Twitter, the happy stuff on Twitter, let's talk about happy stuff on Twitter, Espo, was the hashtag #Fave7Movies, which was fun. I thought about doing this, but it was so, I got to like 12 movies. I was like, I won't tweet anything. So you, as you do best, you do #Fave7AZAthletes to make this local. So we got some responses on Twitter. We'll get to some of those. Let's start off with you.
You want my 7.
Give me
all
the
right,
7.
I'll give you – I actually have 2 teams here for you because I like to break the rules on this show.
You told me before the show you'd have 1 airing of grievance. You ended up with 2, dogging on yourself as well, and now you're going to have 2 teams. So it's your show, Espo.
I'm one half of the show.
It's your
show. I make half the decision.
Okay,
so
just do what you got to do.
All right, so my fave 7, my legitimate list is Charles Barkley, Larry Fitzgerald, Aeneas Williams, one of the great defensive backs, Hall of Famer, great all-around guy. Goran Dragic, another guy that was fantastic. Loved his story and how he came about. Jeremy Roenick, met him. We've talked about this on the show when I was a kid. Have loved him ever since. Jake Plummer, twofold because of what he did at ASU. And yes, I'm a U of A guy, but when I was a kid growing up in the Valley, I rooted for ASU football. And Jake Plummer was great in that undefeated season. Then he came in and was the great hope for the Cardinals there in the late 90s. Let him do their first playoff berth in town. So he's on that list. And then I'm going to break the rules here a little bit. Bruce Arians, not technically an athlete, was in his younger days, but makes my list as well. My second team is the All Ridiculousness. These are guys that I love. They're my fave AZ athletes that would make you go, why in the hell would this guy care about any of these guys? Tom Tupa, former Cardinals quarterback, really was a punter. Mike Fetters, the relief pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks,
and the head snap
that also birthed Mark Grace, one of the great moments where he came in to pitch in a blowout loss, and he did the Mike Fetters head snap, one of my favorite Diamondbacks moments of all time. Marco Milic,
that's a name I haven't heard in so long.
Small forward, I believe it was a small forward, played for the Suns. He was a foreign-born guy that actually is most well-known for jumping over a Honda Del Sol. It was a green Honda Del Sol in a dunk contest in Europe. That was the video that went everywhere when he was brought over. And this is when video was postage size on web pages. Hamed Haddadi.
Haddadi?
The
yes, well.
Iranian center that played for the Suns. And I love him because he wore the highest number in Suns history, number 98. And yes, I actually own the authentic Hamed Haddadi number 98 jersey. Ron Wolfley, the wedge buster from back in the day. Most people know him for his radio work and his color commentary. I know him as the fullback and special teamers
that made Pro Bowls.
That made Pro Bowls and used himself as a human battering ram. So I always loved Ron for that. Sergio Santos. He was a number one draft pick for the Arizona Diamondbacks as a shortstop.
You're right? Over my head there.
He was awful in the minor leagues. I don't even think he ever made it for any extended period to the majors with the Diamondbacks. Wound up becoming a relief pitcher and pitching well in the majors. So I just love it because it's so obscure, and I knew him down.
And you're an obscure guy at the end of the day.
In Tucson with the Sidewinders when I worked there. And then Danny Granger, Suns great Danny Granger, never played a second for the Phoenix Suns, and I actually have an authentic jersey of his. So that's another
We should one episode have an all never played a minute for the Suns team. I mean, Jalen Rose did play a couple minutes, as we mentioned at the top of the show. Emeka Okafor,
yep.
Danny Granger.
Ben Wallace. Yep. There's a whole bunch of great names.
We should do
like
that. Maybe that's for next week. It's a nice tease for next week.
So my obscure team is fun as well.
I did a team. However, I didn't do my fave seven AZ athletes because, you know, I am a reporter at the end of the day, so I don't want to look too much like a fanboy.
You just want me to look like the fanboy.
I want you to look like
the
fanboy. I have to stick microphones in these guys' faces, I suppose, so I don't want them to be like, oh, you're just a fan.
Someday
so
I might have to do that again, but right now
might.
I don't.
And maybe they'll remember what you said. So these are the top seven guys that I'm a fan of based on covering them. And some of them will go hand in hand based on favorite players as well. Larry Fitzgerald, that's at the top of the list. Not only am I a fan of his as a player, being a fan, but also covering him. He's just one of the most genuine, good human beings on the planet. Channing Frye is one of my favorite people in the world. I mentioned that already. Wore the number 8. He is just one of the most down-to-earth, nice guys. Tell you a quick story. I was making a video for a friend of mine for his wedding, and he's a diehard U of A basketball fan. Me and two other guys were doing it, and I was in locker rooms covering the teams, and there was a couple guys that were U of A guys that came through U.S. Airways Center that I thought, maybe after I interview them, they'd be nice enough to give me a little shout-out. Derek Williams did it, and Solomon Hill did it. And then I went to Channing Frye, and I said, Channing, don't mean to bother you. A friend of mine's getting married. He's a huge U of A Wildcat fan. Would you mind just giving him a little shout-out? His name is Adam. He ended up giving me about a 30-second soundbite of him saying, congratulations, congrats to the wife because she's making the best decision of her life marrying an Arizona Wildcat. I can tell you from experience that my wife could not be happier. Ended up doing this whole big thing. And then a couple weeks later, asked me how it went. He remembered, sought me out, and said, "Hey, how'd that video go?"
He's such a great guy.
He was just, and not only that, just a phenomenal human being. Christian Kirk, who is a superstar in the making at Texas A&M right now, went to Saguaro High School, probably the best high school athlete this state will ever see. In my opinion, unbelievable kid and unbelievable athlete. Taylor Kelly.
You obviously didn't see my freshman football games at Seton if you're going to say he's going to be the greatest of all time.
Taylor Kelly. We'll pretend that you didn't say that just now. ASU quarterback. I got to know him because after Pac-12 Media Day a couple years ago, we happened to ride the bus together back to LAX. Just so happened to sit next to each other, and we talked for a good 45 minutes. Got to know him outside of microphones being shoved in his face. Awesome, awesome guy. Dorian Pickens, another great high school kid out here, went to Pinnacle High, is now at Stanford, one of the most humble but one of the most athletic and talented kids I've had the opportunity to cover. I think he's going to be successful in anything he does. Steve Nash, another one like Fitz, a combination of favorite player slash great to cover. He wasn't known for the best sound bites in the world, but he was always respectful. He always gave you the opportunity. And the guys that were there often, which when at the back end of his career, I was at the Suns for a lot of the home games. When I was at the back end of my KTAR days into me working for Sports 360 AZ, and Nash was always respectful. And the final one is TJ McConnell, the former U of A point guard. I had the opportunity to do a one-on-one with him before his senior season. He was personable, angelic, and he was also going to go down as one of the favorite Wildcats of all time. Those are my Fave 7, hashtag Fave 7 AZ athletes that I've covered in the state of Arizona.
Do you have an obscure guy that you would, if you were going to name a guy that you'd have to have on your obscure team, since I broke the rules,
would you
have an obscure guy? Or am I just so weird? Do I have such a weird psychosis about obscure players in Arizona sports history that I'm the only kind of guy that would do this?
Here's some guys I'll add from my childhood that are obscure and kind of out of left field. Jim McMahon. Played quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals.
I saw him at a movie theater when I was a kid. He wore the sunglasses in the movie theater.
Yep. He's amazing. I'll have to put, let's see. I was a big Frank Johnson fan, not just because of his play, but he also, I went to some camps as a kid and he would come. Fourth quarter Frank, really fun personality.
I'll accept those. Those are also good.
And he never played professionally for in town, but was a U of A guy. Jason Terry is probably my favorite Arizona Wildcat basketball player of all time.
I don't think Jason Terry is obscure, though. I got to be
honest.
That's
not obscure. I almost didn't say it.
He was,
you're putting me on the spot here, man.
It was awesome. Last year, covering the Suns game, I think he was with the Rockets last year.
I have a good one.
We sat, where I sat was right near the courtside seats. So this kid is sitting there by himself. His dad had went to try to track down the popcorn guy. Jason Terry comes and sits with the kid.
That's awesome.
Talking with him. This is at halftime. And it's a Suns fan. He's trying to convert the kid to be a Rockets fan. It was so great. It was entertaining to see. I always enjoyed that.
He's a great guy. Last one. This is an obscure one. Casey Daigle. Arizona Diamondbacks starting pitcher.
Mr. Jenny Finch.
Casey Daigle, every time he pitched, my parents used to have Diamondbacks season tickets, and when Casey Daigle would pitch, there would be Jenny Finch right there. We sat right above where the family sits, so I would have a bird's eye view of Jenny Finch for 9 innings every 5 days.
That's
Casey
creepy.
Daigle.
That's creepy. And yes, and their son Ace. Two pitchers named their son Ace.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's read some. We got some tweets. Let's read some from fans.
I'm going to go from Facebook because we haven't promoted the Facebook page. Facebook.com/dryheatcheck. You can find us there. We're everywhere. Pretty much anywhere you want to be.
I'm everywhere, Fokker.
I was going American Express, you know, everywhere you want to be.
We'll go meet the parents.
So Tom Martin on Facebook said, Fitz, Nash, Barkley, Larry Nance, Carson Palmer, Diana Taurasi, and Randy Johnson.
Diana Taurasi is a great one.
Were his seven? I agree.
So is Larry Nance. My dad would have Larry Nance on his.
I missed the Larry Nance boat. I was a little too young.
My dad is a Clemson fan because of Larry Nance.
Okay. David Zamora said Nash, Luis Gonzalez, Larry Fitzgerald, Shane Doan, Diana Taurasi, Tom Chambers, Adrian Wilson.
A-Dub.
I'm surprised TC on the list. Interesting. That's somebody that obviously was a Suns fan late 80s, early 90s and loved short shorts and mullets. Gilbert Lopez says Steve Nash, Luis Gonzalez, Larry Fitzgerald, Randy Johnson, and Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner, another great one to have on the list. Mario Riley says Justin Upton.
Wow.
Dan Marley, KJ. This is more than seven, but the Danny Ainge, Nash Warner.
He's obscure like you.
Yeah.
He doesn't follow the rules.
And then Cameron Whitman, Nash, Gonzo, Barkley, Amari Stoudemire, Larry Fitzgerald, Randy Johnson, and Shaq, LOL. For, I assume.
Justin Upton made a list?
Yeah, Justin Upton made a list. That guy probably had seats in Uptown.
Uptown, yeah.
Or actually owns the sign that was in Uptown, you know? That was probably like a $60,000 sign that they had in the ballpark that lasted all of a year and a half.
A year and a half.
Good money spent.
Espo, where can everyone find us? We said that there's a lot of different places that you can catch the Dry Heat Check. Let's rattle some of those off.
All right. On Twitter, at Dry Heat Check. Follow us there. Facebook, as I mentioned, facebook.com/Dry Heat Check. You can find us on iTunes. Search Dry Heat Check. Please review the show. I don't care. Give us 5 stars and then tell us we're terrible. Whatever you want to do. But we want those reviews. We're up to 3 on there.
And what's the deal? Yeah, remind everyone of the deal.
If you review us on Facebook, 4 or 5 stars, you okay.
Not a one star?
Any review on iTunes, you screenshot that, you tweet it at me, at Espo. I may open up the prize closet that we mentioned and give you guys some historic Arizona sports memorabilia. So do that. Google Play, you can find us. Audioboom.com as well. Please subscribe to the show across the board. Helps us keep doing it. And as always, you can find us sports360.com/dryheatcheck. That is everywhere.
Sports360az.com.
Did I say sport? Yeah.
You did. Sports, you always call me out when I screw stuff
AZ
up, so I need to do that to you.
.com/dryheatcheck. And yes, I screwed up for the first time in my life.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been the Dry Heat Check with J. Cohen Espo, episode Jalen Rose.